Session number 11891, Major P. Campbell, Reel 4.
Major Campbell, Reel 4. I think that whilst you were a prisoner of war in Sumatra, you once got sunk by a British submarine. Could you tell me about that, please?
Yes, yes. I assume it was a British submarine. We were in Medan, and the whole camp was being moved down to the south of Sumatra. And so we were duly taken down to the docks and loaded aboard a freighter which had two holds, and to increase the passenger carrying capacity, each hold is divided into staging about 3 feet high, so that you had two layers of bodies in each hold. And the convoy we set off in was, this was the largest ship in the convoy, a freighter. There were a number of tankers, oil petrol tankers or oil tankers. And halfway along the voyage, heading down through the straits of Malacca. Aeroplane were flying low overhead to protect us and so on, Jap aeroplanes. And then suddenly we were torpedoed, and very successfully in the middle of the ship, which broke its back, and it settled down to go to the bottom. A lot of people were killed by the collapsing of this stage, this wooden staging in the holds, but a lot of people got out. And then we swam about in the water above the ship, and we tried, most of us tried, to swim to the Sumatran shore, where we hoped that perhaps a submarine would come in at night to get refuel or do something. But we swam towards the shore. But the Japanese rushed about or rowed about, picking up their own people. And then, unfortunately for us, once they had finished picking up their own people, they picked us up.
How long were you in the sea for?
Oh, about 8 hours, I suppose. But fortunately, in those waters, it's quite warm. I think the worst moment was wondering if there were sharks in that bit of the sea or not. I couldn't remember whether there were sharks there. And then the other worst thing was that, having picked us up, they took us aboard a tanker, and they herded onto the deck of this tanker. And I was very much afraid the sub may come back and have another go and get the tanker as well, which wouldn't be a good thing. However, it didn't. And we were landed at Singapore, in the Singapore docks, and taken to Changi Jail. During that time, I then linked up with the 2nd Battalion of Blutch Regiment, who were in prison, almost in toto. And so I linked up with them again, and was able, when the war ended, to return with them and Colonel Frith to India.
Did you learn anything in Singapore about the pressures which were being put upon the Indian members of your regiment to defect to the so-called Indian National Army?
Oh yes, very much so. Unfortunately, there are two Indian officers one time to belong to Tuvaluk, were some of the driving forces in them. There's a man called Baram Uddin, who just joined the battalion the day before Singapore fell. And the other was a man called Seidel, P.K. Seidel, Hindu. And they embraced the idea of the so-called Indian National Army with great enthusiasm, and did very nasty things to other members of the battalion and other officers, Indian officers of the Hyderabad Regiment, amongst others, and trying to force them to join. But their loyalty held, and they refused to have anything to do with it.
What unpleasant things did they do?
Well, they used to. Well, they had all sorts of subtle things, like cutting down, not feeding people, and it's hard to say. It's been so long ago. It's like things which assumed great importance at the time, and which can't really be put into words.
Did you know these two officers?
Oh, yes.
What was Seigel like?
Seigel was, I think you could call him a failed BA. He was a sort of, had an undercurrent of, he joined us from the 8th Punjab Regiment before the Singapore thing blew up. And he was obviously a sort of disappointed man who reckoned that we owed him greater things than he did have. Baran Uddin, I don't know. I didn't really know. We only knew him for a day before the thing happened.
When did Seigel join your battalion?
About 6 months, no. About 9 months beforehand. We've been a long time. And in fact, coming down Malaya, he'd fought well. But there was a bug in him somewhere, some dissatisfied thing. I mean, he wasn't treated with scorn or anything like that. He was treated like any other officer.
Had it been apparent to you before the fall of Singapore that he had a grievance?
No. Apart from, you'd feel an undercurrent of it sometimes, but nothing you could put your finger on. You wouldn't say, oh, I must watch that chap.
Were there any officers or others that you knew who were stalwart?
Oh, yes. In fact, one of the main people was a chap called Mohammed Ismail Khan, who was really a very good officer. Also, a chap called Abrar Hussain, who joined us with Ismail, who joined us in Bareilly before we went overseas.
Were they both Pathans?
No, Ismail was a Pathan. Abrar is a PM. But there was another PM called Durrani. Mohammed Ismail Khan Durrani. And he was also state lawyer, and they did a lot to influence all the Jawans to stay loyal and not to go over.
How much contact did you have with the Indians from your battalion whilst you were in Singapore?
Once I was in Singapore, quite a lot, because one went out on working parties. And they went out on working parties. You meet up in the docks and things like that. And one could pass messages. It was risky, but you could do it. And you could keep in touch with them very well, so that when the end came, when the ceasefire came, One merely moved out of Changi, moved down to where the battalion was, which would be being held together as one unit. And within 2 or 3 days, we were on the road as two Baluch, which was very good indeed.
But whilst you were in Japanese captivity in Singapore, did you know these details that you've just told me about the individuals who had and had not joined the INA?
Yes.
Or did you just discover these details after the war?
No, we knew it as we made contacts, having arrived in Singapore.
Was there anything that the British officers could do to influence the situation regarding recruitment to the INA?
No. In fact, the INA went out of their way to try to humiliate British officers. You know, they'd demand that you would get, say, Lance Knight, or something, Lance Corporal or something like that, who'd suddenly join the INA and who walked about as an officer in the INA, who would insist that you saluted him every time he passed. And little things which don't seem a lot, but they're little pinpricks like that. So that's how it was.
Did you go back to India as a battalion from Singapore?
Oh, yes. Thanks to these various officers, Ismail and so on, who had held the battalion together and kept them loyal, we were lucky. Colonel Frith and myself and Ismail took the whole battalion back to India, took us home to Calcutta and then to Karachi, which is our base, which is our what battalion? It's a training battalion of the regiment. And we arrived back and had a reception at the railway station or arrived with the regimental colours being trooped down the length of the train to show us we're really back.
What was the feeling towards those who had defected to the INA? Was it one of hostility or did people have a certain sympathy for them?
I didn't meet any sympathy with it at all. A lot of people were downright hostile because the Japanese did some terrible things too. The Indian officers, rather than VCOs, Viceroy Commission officers, rather than Indian officers like Ismail. But they took them, they draped them in barbed wire and in fact shot them on the seashore. They took a lot of British officers to, I wasn't one, but there were British officers who were forced to witness this rather barbarous murder of people who refused to join the INA.
Which brother officers of yours saw this amongst the British officers?
Colonel Frith, the commanding officer. He was taken with a number of commanding officers from other regiments to do that. Fritho is unfortunately dead now. He went to Canada and now he's dead.
Did you see any of the VCOs wrapped in barbed wire?
No, I was, at that time, I was cavorting in Sumatra.